Okay, so good evening. I wanted to talk tonight about beginning well. So wherever you are in the world, it's clear that this pandemic that we're all living with is entering a new phase. There's an increased availability of vaccines and all the complications that come with different variants. But nonetheless, it's clear enough that things are starting to shift a bit, and sometime later this year will be different. So as we move toward whatever post-pandemic life looks like, it is helpful to consider how to pick up new activities well. So in this case, we actually have the luxury of time, of considering what it is and how it is that we might want to pick things up as we go forward. In some sense, we don't ever really have this time. It's just an illusion, because every moment, right, experience is arising. It's arriving and arising, and we're meeting it. So there's always beginning. Every moment, there's a continual process of beginning. But nonetheless, there are some times when we can imagine that we have a beginning that we can think about or move toward in some intentional way. So it is worthwhile when we have this time to begin things well, So when this is done, when we begin well, then experience unfolds more naturally. And also we're in a better position to learn from experience as it comes, and also to make the necessary adjustments to stay on course. All of that, a lot of that depends on beginning well in some way. So what is this, you know, what does this mean? What do the Buddhist teachings say about beginnings? We hear a lot about endings, about cessation and letting go and being free. It sort of implies something dropping away, maybe ending suffering. The end of suffering is the aim of the path. But what about the beginnings? The Buddha did talk about beginnings and how to do it well. And the teachings mostly focus in three areas: our understanding, our intention, and our effort. So we'll talk about those things tonight. I think it's no surprise that we are instructed to pay attention to the mind as we are beginning things. You know, that's considered a really important place to notice as we go forward. There's the well-known opening stanza of the Dhammapada that begins, "Mind is the forerunner of all things." So that's pretty clear that how we are in the mind, it's going to have a major impact on what happens as things go forward. And then more specifically, there are other teachings. There's one in the Majjhima Nikaya that says quite directly, right view comes first. Right view comes first. So this is about our understanding. It doesn't mean, let me unpack that a little bit. The right view doesn't mean that we are sort of passively applying a view that we receive from the teachings or from our teacher or something, and just sort of sticking it on. Okay, here's the belief I need to apply in order to begin. It's actually more subtle than that. So whatever view we're using, and there always is one, we always have some kind of a view coming in, that's going to provide the context or the orientation for what follows. So then what right means about right view is that we should adopt an orientation or a view or an understanding that is appropriate for the task at hand, for what it is that we're beginning. So in practice, and this is the context for that quote, right view comes first, if the task is walking the Buddhist path to the end of suffering, to peace, to liberation, then what we would choose is what is called right view, which means an appropriate view for doing that. And, you know, this generally has two forms, because it's this right view is useful for whatever we undertake to make it part of our path. So the two forms of this appropriate or right view, the first one is the understanding that actions have results and that we have some choice about that. So we live in a world that has laws of cause and effect in going on. You know, they may be more complex than we can exactly see all the details of, and they may operate in different ways at different times, but generally speaking, actions will have consequences, and we have some choice about that. So in particular, actions that come from a mind that's oriented toward harm will lead to our own suffering, our own dukkha. And in contrast, actions that come from a mind oriented toward peace or toward non-harm will tend to bring happiness to us. This is one, these are these, some of these basic laws of action and consequence. So even if we have kind of no idea about the long-term or large picture of what we're doing, we can at least in this moment choose to do actions from an orientation of non-harming. And that will be good in some sense. And so people can feel great relief at having this as a guide. You don't actually have to have it all figured out in the whole big picture, because things are complex, especially in something like this pandemic or in a complex interconnected world like we live in. So we can, you know, make some attempt to think about our views and our orientation in the bigger picture. But what matters really is that right now we come from a place of non-harming that will have good consequences for us, for our happiness and those around us. So that's one wise orientation, wise view. And then the second dimension of right view or appropriate view, which is actually not so different, is to see things specifically in terms of dukkha and its end, or suffering and its end, or stress and its end. So we can notice in a situation what feels stressful or tense or somehow unsatisfactory. We can notice that, attune to that, and then move toward its release. So if I'm entering a room and I feel some tension in my chest, I can notice that and then take care of that in some way. Notice, oh, am I feeling afraid in some way? Or, and what, you know, what might I do? Maybe just being mindful of the fear is sufficient, or something else. But tuning toward dukkha and its end is a way of orienting toward the Four Noble Truths, toward what is it that's challenging right now? How am I somehow holding on, wanting something in order that that's coming about? How could I apply something I know from practice to somehow ease or release some of that suffering, you know, without making it complex? But this orientation of dukkha and its release is very much in line with what we're doing on the path. So that's a good guide for our actions as we undertake things. So even, you know, just another everyday example is if I'm beginning a work project with somebody and I'm going to talk with them about this project. So it's a beginning. How do I orient? I could orient toward cultivating kindness, active listening, a healthy relationship with this person that I'm going to be working with. Or I could practice mindfulness of not drifting off into my own thoughts, but actually staying on task and being clear about what's happening in the conversation. Those are both forms of this appropriate view that I just talked about. And those are very different than, say, orienting toward, okay, I've got to convince this person to do it my way. I've got to get my point across and make sure that I stay in control of this thing as it's starting. That's very different, right? So that's going to have a major impact on how things unfold. So, and this works on the cushion too. We did it in the guided meditation. You said if we sit down and we orient toward bringing some ease to the body, some ease to the mind, some sense of what we're doing, that will have a different effect than if we don't do those things to orient at the beginning of our sit. These simple acts can have very important results for how the meditation proceeds. So in general, we're asking, how can this be wholesome or supportive of the path as I go forward? Now, how can I reduce dukkha through this beginning? So all of this amounts to right view, our understanding and our orientation as we begin a task, go into something. So right view, as you may recall from the steps of the Eightfold Path, it feeds into the next step, which is called right intention. And that is actually the crux, the sort of key point, the crucial point of how we engage skillfully with beginnings. I would say that's the key one. So classically, there are three wholesome intentions that we orient around as we go forward, each of which is set up to counteract some kind of unwholesome intention that we might have in the mind, some sort of tendency. So the intention, the first intention is typically called renunciation. People don't always connect with that word. So we could also call it letting go, or even being at ease if we, you know, wanted to extend it a little bit. So it counteracts the unskillful pursuit of sense pleasure, you know, just wanting to grasp at the pleasant part, wanting to get things that are good and pleasant and easeful for me. You know, these sorts of graspy kinds of orientations. The intention of being generous or renouncing the need for those things is this first orientation. And it has an effect of coming in with an open hand, with an open heart, with an open mind. And then the second and third of these right intentions or wise intentions are stated as clear counteractions. So they're stated as non-ill will and non-cruelty. So we also come in with a mind that isn't oriented in a negative or aversive or oppositional way as we move into things. Or if they're named more in the positive, it could be named as goodwill or as compassion. So these are essentially, these three set the tone of our engagement with things. So and the tone that we're setting in life matters so much. That's based in our intention. I guess I'm thinking about work projects today because I'm thinking of another time that I was beginning a work project, and I was sending an email to one of my colleagues about the project. And I noticed that I kept wanting to include some kind of comment about their experience with this, and a little bit derogatory, like, you know, I know you don't have so much experience with this, or something like that. I don't know. But I noticed that there was a slight feeling of tension around that. And I realized that I was kind of trying to question my colleague's level of experience in order to elevate my own, and therefore show that, you know, I was going to be able to contribute very well to this project or something. So, but I caught this, you know, luckily, as an intention of ill will. And I instead changed what I wanted to write to something that was more inclusive, more connecting at the beginning of this project, not highlighting their lack of experience or my experience, which was a little bit delusional to think that way. And I'm certain that that set a much better tone than if I hadn't made that change. Would have changed the relationship at the beginning of the project. We can also set the tone in advance of an experience or a situation that we're going into, and then just trust that it will carry us in. So, for example, if we're about to go into a meeting or even a social encounter or a party of some kind, we can, as we're walking toward the door or sitting in the car before we go in, we can set an intention of goodwill or of mindfulness or something like that, and just orient the mind that way. And then, you know, you don't have to constantly think about it and bring it to mind and be distracted by it during the encounter. You just set it and then walk in and trust that it will carry through in some way. It may not carry, you know, entirely through the entire encounter, or it may, but generally this is a good thing to do with the mind, is to orient it well when you're starting. I remember a friend of mine went to practice in Asia, and she was doing intensive retreat practice, but even in that setting, the abbot of the monastery used to ask the people who were practicing there that in the morning when they woke up, before they got out of bed to start their day, that they spend a few minutes doing loving kindness practice. And the way he said it was, this will set the tone for everything else you do. And then, you know, the rest of the day they were doing mindfulness practice, vipassana, concentration, you know, sort of more traditional wisdom practices, but he wanted them to do this loving kindness at the very beginning to set the tone for the rest of the day. So you might try this also, see what you can remember to do in the morning before you get out of bed, just to meet the day well. So in general, we're aiming to act and speak and even think from a place of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. That's the overall picture. And so the three right intentions that I just named are very clearly covering the first two, of non-greed and non-hatred. So renunciation, for example, would cover non-greed, and non-ill will and non-cruelty would cover non-hatred. So it encounters those first two, you know, clear defilements of the mind. But then we might ask, you know, where is non-delusion in terms of orienting ourselves? Sometimes people have questions about the second step of the path because it doesn't seem to include non-greed, non-hatred. Where's the non-delusion? It turns out that that is covered by right view, by what we talked about first. So, you know, having the correct view that we're moving towards suffering and the end of suffering, and that our actions have consequences and we have some choice, that is non-delusion, knowing those things. So this threefold purity of volition, if you will, non-greed, non-hatred, non-delusion, is the fundamental way to begin, and also to proceed, and also to end. The Buddha says very clearly in a different sutta that volition or chaitana lies at the heart of action, of kama. So that strongly influences the results that we experience. So that covers a lot of the territory, but all of that is kind of the prep in the mind. And so there's also the actual act of beginning. You know, what else do we need to begin well? The third thing that I named is that there's something to do with our energy as we actually engage with the beginning of a task. And so let's talk also about this area of energy. The Buddha talks about the importance of generating wholesome energy, or virya, that's the word for energy or effort, as we undertake a task. So in particular, this is a very stock or standard phrase you'll find in the suttas, like it goes like this. One generates desire, makes an effort, arouses energy, applies one's mind, and strives. So I know that that sometimes sounds a little too energetic for those of us in the West who are a little bit action-oriented and result-oriented, and so we're told not to strive quite so strongly. But that phrase is very common in the suttas. One generates desire, makes an effort, arouses energy, applies one's mind, and strives. So we might just encapsulate all of that into that middle phrase, arouses energy. So that's virya arubhati. That's the Pali phrase. And arubhati means to engage with or to undertake, in a sense. So we should be willing to put forth some effort for things to go well as we're beginning. So we orient our mind and then we bring forth this kind of wholesome energy to get it going, in a sense. So instead of being a little bit more passive or lackluster about how we get started on things, later when there's momentum, then we're encouraged to back off and be a little bit more effortless. You might have heard that phrase, effortless effort. And we did that a little bit in the meditation, where at the beginning we were a little bit more attentive, and then at the end relaxed our effort and just allowed experience to unfold. That's often a good way to think about the energy in a project. So wise effort means the right amount of effort. And well, that's one aspect of it, is to bring the right amount of effort, not too much and not too little. And at the beginning, when we're just starting things out, sometimes for beginnings, a fair amount of effort is needed because we're trying to generate momentum or else change direction of momentum that we already had. So you might think of beginnings as requiring a little bit more energy, a little bit more focused effort to get going in a good direction. So considering beginnings, I've been kind of orienting us around beginnings in daily life, particularly also in this bigger picture of beginning what's going to happen as things start to open up and people come into more contact with each other, and maybe we start interacting with more people than we have been. These things would be very good to keep in mind. But actually there is quite a bit about beginnings that happens on the cushion too. And I also alluded to this in the meditation. There's a stage of insight practice where we become very attuned to beginnings. I asked you to do it consciously during the sit, but there's a time when it just comes without needing to be deliberate about it. So that the mind gets really interested in beginnings. It's an interesting, fun time of practice because mindfulness gets really sharp because you're catching the first moment of things. It's like, oh, you see the breath come into being from a moment before when there wasn't one. And you see the in-breath tails off, and then the out-breath begins. We see that first moment when there starts to be the air exiting instead of entering. And it's exciting. And maybe we see the first shift in a mood. You know, we're feeling angry or irritated, but we don't get caught up in it. We're mindful. And then there comes a moment when it's like, it's like the mind sort of turns away from that and we feel something else come in, a sense of relief or joy or peace or many other things. We see that first moment. We know, there's the moment where the anger turned. And we might also see the first moment of a thought. You know, we're sitting, it's not that there's absolutely zero thoughts, but we're kind of between thoughts and we're not really noticing thoughts at that moment. And then we'll see a little spark, like the mind starts to form an idea and we see it kind of arising out of the matrix of the mind, this idea. We can see, that's going to be a thought in one more instant. It's going to break the surface and I'm going to know what those words are. And every once in a while, one of those will come and we'll be mindful of it and it will just dissipate before it ever forms into the image or the word. And we wonder, what was that thought going to be? You'll never know. But it's a fun time of practice, seeing these beginnings. There's a lot of wisdom in this. To see and feel beginnings means that we can also see and feel the very first moment of clinging. We were peaceful, calm, mindful, and then the mind started to form an identity or attach to something or hold on, no, don't let that go. And we see that. we see that little grip and we can feel that the moment that we begin to cling is the moment of the arising of suffering. We see the second noble truth is that clinging and suffering are identical. And we can only be sure of that if we see them begin and end together. So it's important. And so then we can start to get wise about how we engage with beginnings, because stuff is coming every moment. And we see if we grasp it, we're going to suffer. So we learn not to. We learn to let it arise as it is, to let it be itself as it comes into being, without grasping it as mine, without putting it in a box. Oh, I know what that is. And immediately labeling it, without controlling it. Letting it arise and have its life, whether it's going to be big or small, can we just trust that it can come into being as it is? So we start to see this, and there's a lot of wisdom that comes from getting intimate with beginnings and with how we relate to beginnings on the cushion. And then that will, of course, feed into how we do it in life also. When things come in that are surprising, as happens all the time, our partner, we don't know what our partner is going to say next. Can we meet it? Can we just let that be there? We turn the corner and see something unexpected. Can we open to that? Or do we close off or get scared or try to control it or try to make it what we want it to be? We'll see again and again how we're relating to life when we start to see on the cushion how we relate to things coming in, beginnings coming into our mind and our body. So this is an important area of practice, beginnings. And as we learn to begin well and engage in ways that are open and connecting and filled with peace, goodwill, all those right intentions, that too will help us learn to end well. To let go, to let things cease, to let them end, to not cling. So all of this is feeding into our wisdom and our compassion. So I wish you well in exploring beginnings, a very interesting area. And also with whatever is beginning in your life, beginning in this springtime, maybe it's autumn if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, beginning with things opening, beginning with seeing more people. Whenever that occurs, you might consider how to meet that well. So, many blessings for your practice. Take care.